Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we came, became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Gordon Reid and the author of the excellent new book, Black Boots and Football Pinks, The 50 Lost Wonders of the Beautiful Game, Daniel Gray, to look back in Ross County. We'll talk a bit more about Daniel's great new book. We'll preview the fixture against Aberdeen and we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
How are you doing?
Thank you. Hello.
Well, we'll start. Well, what we'll do first is I'll actually advertise the fact that this will be a wee bit different from the usual podcast. It won't be as Motherwell focused, I guess. But we will start by talking about Motherwell and yesterday's Angbrew Cup defeat to Ross County. Gordon, it was a very spirited performance. The boys get back into the game. It possibly hinged on a controversial sending off for Christian Mbulu. The referee was controversial throughout the afternoon, to be perfectly honest. But I think we can be very happy with our efforts in the Angbrew Cup and plenty of hope there for the future.
Definitely. I thought once again it was a very impressive performance by the young players yesterday against what was a very experienced Ross County side. I think they're going really well in the Championship. I think they're second or third in the league, so it was always going to be a massive test for them. But I thought to a man, they gave a really good account of themselves once again. You know, I think we were all, of the fans that were at the Sligo game in the last round, we were impressed by the football they played, you know, the technical ability of almost all the players on show, the players in the back line. And we wondered just maybe how they would do, maybe physically, against a strong and experienced side. And I was really pleasantly surprised by how well they competed in that sense as well. I think, as you said, you know, probably the reaction of the players at the end of the game told you its own story. They looked really disappointed that they hadn't taken something from the game, which tells you everything about it, really. You know, the Christian Mbulu red card was a bit of a game changer. Even with 10 men, though, you know, they were still pushing. I think as well there's possibly a worry that the players might have tired a little bit with them, you know, being a bit younger and hadn't played a lot of competitive football. But even with 10 men, the last 20, 30 minutes, they were still pushing for the equaliser towards the end and were unlucky at times not to get it. But, you know, and also as well, it's probably worth missing David Turnbull as well, who obviously has captained them up to this point and is obviously probably the standout player, hence why he's been in the Motherwell first team in the last few weeks. So all in all, it was a really, certainly in terms of the performance, if not the result, it was extremely positive, and I think everyone should take massive credit from that. In terms of the refereeing, I think, as you said, the Christian and Bulu red card, you know, I think at the time, we certainly didn't see what had happened. I don't think many people within the ground had seen what had happened. Obviously, having watched the MFC TV highlights, you can see that he's barged into the Ross, I think it's Don Kerry after the goal.
Yeah, it's Kerry.
For me, it's not a red card. The refs, I think the refs saw it. You could see he's seen it, obviously. But I didn't think he was going to make a decision. It didn't look like he was going to make a decision on it. If you actually watch the highlights, Christian Mbulu joined in the celebrations and is starting to make his way back to his own half. And then I think what actually brought the incident to my attention was the reaction of the Ross County players sort of surrounding the referee and obviously Kerry on the deck. And I got the impression, certainly from my opinion, the referee made the decision off the back of the county players' reaction. I think at best, you know, most sorry, it really should have been a yellow. probably a bit naive and a bit silly from Mbulu, but for me, a harsh red, and it did cost us. I think we lost a goal from a set play straight after it, and that was obviously a decisive goal in the game. So I think they can feel a wee bit hard done by, definitely by that decision.
Daniel, your book documents the lost wonders of the modern game of football. I would imagine for that reason you would have quite strong views on the Edinburgh Cup, which has been roundly criticised on introduction, but I think slowly but surely there is maybe certainly sections of the Motherwell support that have been very enthused by this tournament. I don't know whether that's to do with the fact that the first team are struggling just now and the results and performances haven't been very good, but it's kind of captured the imagination of our fan base, and that is kind of backed up by two strong home attendances for both the Sligo game and yesterday's game against Ross County.
Yeah, I mean, I might surprise you because you'd think I'd come on and grumble and say everything was better in the olden days and all of that. But there's something that appeals to me about this rejuvenation, or probably people would use a more negative word, of the tournament. And that is these fixtures it throws up, because I always love pre-season friendly, when pre-season friendly throw up these kind of fixtures. You know, the games are awful in the pre-season friendlies, but I've always liked these kind of fixtures. They're sort of like those birthday cards your nana gets you with random teams on the front of them. And from that point of view, the anorak in me, which is a large part of me, let's be honest, really likes these fixtures. And it reminds me of hearing about these tournaments that are a bit before my time, and I'm guessing your two's time as well, like the Anglo-Scottish Cup. I remember the Anglo-Italian Cup just about for Middlesbrough's my team. And so there's that bit of me that just kind of likes that. And as you say, it's got that intrigue. You're getting to see some of your younger players, some of, you know, next season's players effectively. So there's that kind of thing. And the selection of National League English teams, I'm still a bit mystified by, like Sutton United and things. But I, you know, surprisingly, I quite like it.
Daniel just mentioned there, Gordon, players of next season. I'm kind of hoping quite a few of these guys that played yesterday are very much in Stephen Robinson's radar for this season. Particularly guys like Barry Maguire, Adam Livingston, who were excellent. But what it did throw up is a few question marks over, or more question marks perhaps, over our signings during the summer. Because when we've had these guys with that amount of ability coming through the youth setup, why are we signing more players to fill our bench to the detriment of these younger guys?
No, I absolutely agree. You know, we've spoken about it, or at least you guys have spoken about it on here for probably quite a few weeks now, given how poor the performances and results have been in the first team. It's kind of been an ironic timing, if you like, that probably our under 20 side has never had this much exposure ever. And it's that coming at a time when obviously the first team are under, you know, a bit of pressure for the way they've been playing and performing. But like you say, you know, what's really jumped out at me, and I've maybe only been to the Sligo and the game yesterday, so I haven't seen these guys in a really, you know, week in, week out basis. But what jumps out at you is that there's at least three or four players there who, you know, as you say, would look ready to join the first team right now, let alone, never mind next season. You know, I think, going back to your point about the players brought in the summer, it definitely seems like, you know, and an extra, you know, I can understand the argument from looking back to last year. Robinson obviously would say they wanted to strengthen the bench because there was times last season we get caught out, I think, with injuries, and it cost us a few games. But I think with these guys having an extra year under their belts and a bit more experience, they look as if they are more than ready to step up. You know, looking at one or two of the areas on the pitch where we seem to be struggling in the first team at the moment, for example, you know, there's been talk about the left back or the left wing back position. You know, Adam Livingston's jumped out in the last two games as a player who looks as if he could, you know, easily make the step up at the moment. Similarly, on the left side, Jake Hasty as well. So, yeah, I think it's a shame that, you know, in hindsight, we have brought in five or six sort of squad players, if you like, who, certainly in my opinion, aren't necessarily any better than some of these boys and at present are, if not keeping them out the first team, certainly keeping them out off the substitutes bench.
I think if I could just jump in there, that's not just a Motherwell thing either. I think that happens across football. Certainly at Middlesbrough, we have these young lads. This season alone, Tavernier's brother, you know the brother that's at Rangers, we have his brother, who's a fantastic right winger. We have Lewis Wing, a really attacking midfielder, come from non-league football. We just love watching them. You relate to local players a bit more anyway. But they're just not in the side. They're lucky if they get in these, you know, 18, 16-man squad or whatever, and Borough go out and get George Saville on loan from Millwall, and that'll turn into a £6 million deal in January. And you stand there and you think, I don't think he's that much better than what we've got already. There's just this strange thing. I don't know if it's protecting them or what the right word for it is, but it seems to happen across football. And us as supporters, we're just thinking, put the local lad in, put the young lad in. We want to see him grow and play for us. And of course, you've got a great record with that at Motherwell as well.
Yeah, what struck me when the guys were interviewed before the game and after the game as well was their enthusiasm and their excitement around playing at Fir Park and being given a platform to display their skills. Yeah. Then you mentioned the loan players. We've signed someone that isn't as good as our young players in Connor Salmon and is possibly receiving a substantial wage from both us and ourselves.
Yeah, you will be, yeah. The loan thing, I mean, it just happens again and again. I don't know, I go on about Middlesbrough, but we've down the years, we've had so many sort of Chelsea and Spurs, not even in the, you know, top three teams, not even in the under-23s or anything. And you just think, you sit there and you think, they're not much better than what we've got, if at all. But at least they're young in some ways. So you're seeing someone at the start, whereas the likes of Connor Salmon and things, you're just thinking, nah, let's move on. Let's use our own lads. It's a strange old thing.
Yeah, it's a brilliant point too, because you think, what advantage have you got from these loan players? Because inevitably, well, they maybe give you 6 months or a good season. They'll then certainly go back, because you're not going to, the value will skyrocket, and then that rules us out of buying them. You then get the situation where the young guys just get stale and possibly demotivated.
And I dare say they go down the pyramid or whatever and do the same at, you know, Montrose or Arbroath or wherever to what they're thinking. And it's just a strange old market. And you as fans, you look back at, say, a season 5 or 6 years ago and you look at, you know, you look in the programme at who was playing in those games and you go, I don't remember him. Did he play for us? It's just a bizarre thing.
Yeah, that said, there's a danger, actually, because we won the Youth Cup back in 2015. And with the exception of a few guys that actually played on that day were already involved with the first team, guys like Chrissy Cadden and Ben Hall, who went to Brighton. But these guys were pretty much established. The rest of them have really had to wait their time. Some of them have fallen away. Some of them are still here, not getting their chance. And then the likes of David Turnbull has finally got his chance now. But it's quite frustrating, because I think what the Embry Cup has demonstrated is, if you've got a Saturday game, a free Saturday, the fans will go along, and the fans gave them a standing ovation at the end yesterday as well, because we like the idea of our own and things like that. It's just, it was just nice. Everything about the Embry Cup has been great. The rest of the season, dreadful. So, more less Premiership.
I think as well, you know, the fact that the under-20s have been doing so well in this tournament, and it, like I say, it's had that exposure, has also sort of coincided with David Turnbull breaking into the team in recent weeks and making a real impact as well. You just wonder, you know, the players' confidence, the young players' confidence must be probably at its highest right now, given that they've played these games and they've competed well in them. The longer the season progresses, you know, and if it, I hope they do, but if say they weren't to get their chance, you just feel that maybe the confidence maybe start to wane. And you know, as Daniel says, we've seen it in the past where we've had some talent looking forward to breaking through, and then, you know, 3 or 4 years later that you're looking at them and they're playing further down the leagues. I really hope that's not the case here, because I think, as I said earlier, you know, we've got at least 3 or 4 players that I would expect to see become Motherwell first team players at that crop.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move on and we'll talk about your new book, Daniel. I'm currently making my way through it just now and thoroughly enjoying it, I must say.
It's good.
It's a standard question to open with, but give us a wee bit of the inspiration behind the idea for Black Boots and Football Pinks.
Yeah, well, I've been, in a couple of weeks in December, I've been going to football for 30 years. My first Middlesbrough match was in December 1988, a 3-3 draw against Aston Villa. And I felt like football has changed more in those 30 years than at any other time before in its history, really. It's been an incredible period, some of it for the worst, a lot of it for the better. You know, the book is about things that have gone, and I'm sad about a lot of them, but I don't pretend everything was better in the past. I mean, I take my 8-year-old daughter to Hibs and to Middlesbrough with me, and I'm so much happier taking her to this version of football than I would have been to the version of football my dad took me to early on. So I just wanted to mark, I wrote in the introduction, to sketch the ghosts before they leave the room. So to write up all of these things while they're still in my memory, that have disappeared in that time. Some of them do still exist. They do still hang on in some places, especially in Scotland. And so living in Scotland helped me think of some of them, because Scotland, maybe because it's a lack of money or what, has preserved some things. Like one of the chapters is about grumpy turnstile operators, for instance. And I certainly still encounter those lower down the chain and in junior football and things like that. So that chapter idea would be that, you know, I go to Middlesbrough now and it's a barcode and there's no human interaction and I'm buzzed in by a barcode. Hibs is the same, actually. So it's about these different things: goalkeepers wearing trousers, proper division names, patterns in turf, pixelated scoreboards, all of these, and of course the two in the title, these things that have disappeared. And just, yeah, really that thing of wanting to mark them before they disappear from memory altogether after 30 years of fandom.
We took some submissions online for things that the Motherwell supporter missing from modern day football, and it's quite interesting you say the turnstile operators. We've just actually moved to barcodes. We've still got a few grumpy turnstile operators, but they've mainly been replaced by digital scanners. Our scoreboard had about 4 bulbs left in it, but that's now been replaced by a high tech all singing, all dancing.
Yeah, the Jumbotron things, and they're just such an assault on the senses, really, and yeah.
Yeah, that is quite loud. It's quite impressive, I suppose, when we've been. But you get so used to actually asking how long there's left or anything else with your pals at the game. Yeah. I don't tend to actually check the scoreboard because it'd been broken for that long. It was a topic of conversation, so it gets a bit boring when things get sorted out. The best example we definitely got on Twitter was the pie and Frazzle. He described his dad's taught him exactly the amount of crust to tear off his pie and pour the grease onto the steps of the stand.
That was particularly brilliantly Scottish. It made me so happy. I just thought, maybe I love the Scottish game because I'm an outsider. I often think that, because that just summed up so much of the humour in Scottish football. The technique of a father passing to son, how to get rid of the requisite amount of disgusting fat in your pie. Just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
There's a real balance in that, though, because of course if a bit too much crust and then you lose all the meat inside the pie as well, so it's a very skilled...
Well, when I first started going to Scottish football, I was always dead impressed with the way people put brown sauce or red sometimes on top of the pie. Because the Scotch pie is such a different shape to your classic English pie. And I just remember marvelling, just standing there going, oh, they use the top of the pie as a receptacle to sauce. What an ingenious country.
Yeah, we're very, very cultured.
Well, it's my kind of culture, that's the thing. So I love it, yeah.
Other suggestions we had were things like well-executed tackles from behind, and in brackets, and not even the well-executed ones.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely.
Changing ends at half-time to go with which way you're shooting, which I think some other fans still do in the stand anyway.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, the turnstiles...
Definitely still doable in Scotland, isn't it? Arbroath, you can still Gayfield, you can still swap ends at half time in a couple of grounds. So that's a beautiful thing.
Gordon, is there any that kind of stand out to you as things that you miss from perhaps your childhood of watching football? There's so much that has changed, even at Fir Park over the years, isn't there?
Definitely. I'm 33. I feel like my football. More become a footballing old man, I get quite grumpy about a lot of things in the modern game. But obviously, as you know, I grew up in Ayrshire, so some of the first games I went to were actually at Somerset Park in Ayr. And which probably is, a lot of these things are probably still the same at the moment now, if you've ever been to some that time. But I do still remember things like, you know, people selling chewing gum and macaroon bars and things like that. You know, guys walking past the weigh-in selling that. The toilet just being a brick, and it would just be somebody you basically peed into the floor rather than any sort of porcelain involved at all. I don't know if that's still the same at Somerset Park, as I said, it might still be, but in general.
I don't think we missed that either.
I don't know.
I love Somerset Park, and Ed drew 0-0 yesterday with 10 men, didn't they? But I think that there's a real worry if they do go up, which would be incredible, that they won't be able to play there. I'm not sure if anyone's being able to say whether that's true because of the amount of, you know, because it's terracing on three sides, isn't it? They're exactly those kind of charms. And there's a wider point than you're 3 years younger than me, and I'm 36 and feeling like an old man as well already. But there's a sort of, when I was thinking about these things, yeah, I mentioned the one about turf patterns. Ground used to have individual turf patterns, tartans and deck chair stripes and all this stuff. And each ground had different goal nets as well. Now nearly everywhere, even when I go, to juniors or the Lowland League or whatever, they have those three prongs on the goal net. There used to be stanchions and hooks and all of these different goal nets. So there's been this real loss of individuality and authenticity. So, you know, it can sound like the moanings of a premature old man, but there's something in that. That sort of way football has become chain store grounds and teams almost. That individuality was a lovely thing, whether it's a fella selling macaroon bars or whatever. But it still can be found. I think the Somerset Park experience and the Capilano experience haven't changed that much.
It's interesting that, because we talk about Somerset Park, and the wonderful thing about Somerset Park is that it's a bit historic. It is a bit of a relic, yeah. Really. Whereas you've got grounds like Ackies, Livingston, Airdrie to a certain degree as well.
Yeah,
all very much the same plan, the same kind of sterile atmosphere. Of course, these grounds, if they're full, they could be better, but...
Yeah, they couldn't be noisy,
a traditional ground.
I used a chapter in the book called Knowing the Names of Grounds, because in my youth, I knew all 92 in England and an awful lot of the Scottish ones as well, because they were named, you know, they had proper names. They were named after an area or a trade or whatever, rather than sponsors and things like that. And there's just that I just think we threw away so much of the interesting architecture and the romance, really. We could have modernized, but kept some of the old architecture instead of just knocking grounds down. And so it's great that Scotland has a few. Palmerston has three old, beautiful stands. And I just feel like we've thrown, if it had been anything else, there would have been preservation orders. It would have been listed. There would have been outcry. And because it's in Scotland, on the whole, football remains a working class game. It gets left behind, really. And it's a wonderful thing that somehow we've still got some of these grounds. But I have been to just about every ground in Scotland that I want to go to. As a consequence, I've not been to the new St Mirren ground because it just doesn't appetise me at all, whereas I really was in love with Love Street. And I know I'm probably wrong and that's the future and I have to just embrace it. But that's where I am now and I don't think I'm going to change.
That's what we talk about quite a lot, isn't it? Even in the pub after the game, you kind of always know that Fir Park won't be there forever. We'll eventually have to move. But I think you'd agree, Gordon, that it would be a really sad day when that time does come and perhaps we do move to one of these flat pack type stadiums with the four identical stands. It's just a million miles away from Fir Park, where one stand only goes three quarters of the way.
Well,
along
I tell
the
you,
pitch.
And you and your listeners will love a book called Over the Turnstiles or Through the Turnstiles. It's a collection of black and white photos that Steve Finnan, who's has worked for the Sunday Post and DC Thompson for years, has got together unseen photos of Scottish grounds. It's a lovely sort of coffee table book that came out a couple of months ago. And the pictures of Fir Park are immense because it's that three-quarter stand being built and it captures the story of the house that refused to be built in front of. And you can just see it as it's happening in these great photos. And that's something I imagine Motherwell fans would love.
Yeah, that does sound tremendous. Sorry, on you go, Gordon.
No, just going back to, I mean, I know there probably is, I guess, a commercial argument or a money argument for saying that probably changing stadium would maybe make more sense in the long term, but I would absolutely hate it, I've got to be honest. You know, Fir Park just gets so much character, and I know obviously we're biased, but absolutely love it. I do think it's going back to what Daniel spoke about, some of the other grounds, albeit maybe more in the lower leagues, but I just think, you know, it's probably one thing that we still have in Scottish football, maybe compared to down south, is that we still have some of these sort of old-fashioned grounds and just a bit more, still a bit more character sometimes, dare I say, about the game that maybe I lost down south over the years. And I hope we don't change that. I actually think maybe quite the opposite. I'd like to see us maybe market that side of our game a bit.
Daniel, I'd like to discuss some other elements that you're involved in. I'm actually just reading the schedule there. And Busta, obviously not here tonight, but I would have loved to hear him start on what he doesn't like about football, because we would have actually been here for a 5-hour special, I think, by the end of it. So we'll maybe actually ask him that next week, just for a laugh, really. You're involved in a lot of other projects, Daniel, in and around Scottish football. But I'd like to discuss Nutmeg and the real success of Nutmeg from kind of humble beginnings. And I think a few people perhaps doubted its longevity, but you're heading towards the 10th issue, coming out soon. The podcast has attracted a host of impressive guests as well. And you've clearly played a big part in that. How enjoyable has that been?
It's just lovely. Ali was about halfway through issue one. He's about half of the magazine made up when he and I met, and we just got on tremendously well immediately because of our love of print, actually. And I think it's the print thing that has maintained it, because, you know, all the narrative is that print is dying, print is dead and all of this stuff. Everything's about the internet and so on. But actually, there's still a real appetite for a quality print items. And that's what it is. You know, I sort of end up referring to this all the time. But the fact it smells so nice as a magazine, it's just got one of these lovely sort of print scent going on, and it's the object, it's such a quality object, and that does make a difference, I think. And I think a lot of the people who buy it used to probably get a football magazine when they were young as well. I used to get Shoot and 90 Minutes and Match and all of these things, and so there is room for print. I think you've seen a couple of new fanzines in the last few years as well, and that's been really, really nice to see, and to see an appetite, and also bringing new contributors in, bringing people that haven't seen their own words in print before. You know, there were a lot of established writers in there, but that's a great thing. I'm only a writer because of football fanzines. I started in the Middlesbrough fanzine, and there were a lot more fanzines around then. And so the idea that there are young lads, and I hope we get more women on board writing now, that'll end up having a career as a writer, is a real thrill as well. But there's an appetite for it, and there's an appetite for different stories, you know, non-Old Firm stuff, nostalgic stuff, analysis stuff. It's a big mix, you know. It even has poetry in it after all.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'd really recommend people to check it out, and of course coming up to Christmas as well, what better way than a couple issues of Nutmeg to surprise someone. Certainly not your conventional Scottish football publication, I would say, but very entertaining nonetheless. And the podcasts have been excellent too, so congratulations and some really good work there. Gordon, talking about publications in and around football, there's been a lot of debate about the match day programme and the future of that. I must confess, despite the fact even that I contribute to our match day programme, I don't often buy one, to be perfectly honest. And it's a habit I've fallen away from my childhood, where home and away, regardless, I would get a programme. Now I'm possibly more partial to going on the likes of Pye and Bovril, Steelmen Online, social media. Got a 442 subscription, a Nutmeg subscription. So there is so many alternatives to the matchday programme. Is there still a place for the matchday programme in terms of print, particularly in Scottish football, where, of course, there's less demand given the fewer numbers going through the turnstiles, certainly out with the top 5-6 teams?
Yeah, probably a difficult one. Possibly a little bit like yourself, a bit of a hypocrite, because I'd hate to see them go, but I also don't buy them anymore either. So, you know, I used to collect them as a kid, pretty much every game I went to, but that very quickly fell by the wayside, I think, when I hit my sort of teenage years. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether, I know, I think maybe one or two clubs in Scotland have maybe already stopped producing them. I don't know if that's right. I think I'm sure I read that somewhere at the start of this season, but it'd be a shame if that was to be the case. Possibly maybe more for sort of souvenir games or possible something like that, because I think that buy them now, then, you know, it's a sort of weekly thing. But it would be a shame to see them go. It was, again, going back to the nature of the book we spoke about, it's definitely something that sort of part of my childhood of going to football games was always something that I'd always do, was buy a programme.
And Daniel, I suppose the major issue for many clubs is resources, isn't it? You're producing a 64 or 68 page publication, sometimes twice in a week.
Yeah, I'm the same as you two. I could not miss one from the age of about 8 to, say, my mid-20s. If I was at a match and I hadn't got a programme, I would be really quite fretful, actually. And then it sort of dies away. It seems to be quite a pattern with a lot of people, another eclectic still. In fact, a new programme shop opened recently in Bathgate. There's only 3 programme shops in Scotland. I thought that was interesting that they'd opened up and felt there was enough of a market, mainly online, I would think. And I've started buying again because I take my daughter, so I have that same feeling when we miss a Hibs or Middlesbrough programme. So there's definitely that kind of souvenir market for younger people that I think will always be there. But it's a resource thing, isn't it? There's, clubs aren't blessed with huge amounts of money to be able to print glossy things. And I think they'll continue. I think they'll reach a level and perhaps maybe they'll go monthly. I don't know. There'll be different things. Interestingly, in England, this is the first season clubs are allowed. They don't have to do a programme. It was part of their membership of the Football League before. But no one has got rid of theirs. And in fact, Oxford United now do an away programme as well, sold outside the away and focusing on the away team. So if you can be innovative and you can make it match up with the social media and the films and things, I think there is still a way for it. But yeah, perhaps we'll have to start thinking about buying one every now and again. All of us, I'm the same as you two. I like the ritual of it. I like hearing the fella or the woman shouting programmes and all of that as part of the theatre outside the ground. But perhaps we do need to start putting a few quid their way to make sure they survive.
MFC Podcast is brought to you by beer52.com. And as a listener to the podcast, we'd like to offer you a free case of craft beer. All you need to do is head on over to beer52.com/MFC and claim your free case. Beer 52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. All you need to do is pay the £2.95 postage and packaging, choose your case, and it will be delivered next day delivery. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and claim your free case today. Gordon, on Saturday we returned to Scottish Premiership action, and I guess we need to bounce back. A horrible display at Ibrox, a really demoralising defeat. And now Aberdeen visit, a team that are going very well in the Premiership. They're on the run into a massive game at Hampden against Celtic in the Betfred League Cup final. It's another difficult game, and it's hard to see how Stephen Robinson gees up his players for the task ahead. I know the players were in when last week, when normally they would have at least they would normally have a substantial portion of the week off. With it being an international break, he clearly sees a need to get the guys working and get their heads back up, because a 7-1 defeat, yes, they can happen, but the manner of it was pretty diabolical, to be honest.
Yeah, I have to say, I was actually enjoying the distraction of not talking about Motherwell there for 5-10 minutes or so, but yeah, you're right, probably better get back into it. You're right, it's going to be a Saturday. As you said, Aberdeen, I think after having quite a slow start to the season, they're certainly coming into form, so it's not the best time to be playing them, it's probably fair to say. But we've also come into a run now, I guess, in the sort of home straight before the winter break, where I think the next 5-6 weeks we've got a lot of games and a lot of tough games at that as well. So this is probably the first of those. I still think, as well as Aberdeen have been doing, and the fact they're obviously a good side, the glass half full side of me, I still think it's more than possible that they can take something from the game. But as you say, it's going to require a lot more than what we've shown the last hour at Ibrox. Certainly a lot more resolve, a lot more determination than what we got in that match. It'll be interesting to see how we shape up for it, or how we line up for it. Obviously, I know changed the formation round, going back to that St Mirren game a few weeks ago, and it did work for the St Mirren and Dundee matches. And we got the results we needed, and probably even the performances we were looking for as well. But, you know, Sunday was so disappointing that you would imagine there'd be at least some personnel changes. Obviously, Callum McHugh suspended, but, you know, Robinson obviously came out after the Rangers match, and his comments were fairly stinging, it's fair to say, of some of the players. So you would be surprised if there wasn't at least maybe 2 or 3 changes. would love to see, going back to where we started the podcast today, one or two of the maybe the young players get an opportunity, but I'm not sure if that will necessarily be the case in this game. But, you know, the fact that, as you say, he's had them in working extra days training in the last week or so probably tells its own story as well. I do think we can maybe take something from the game, but it's going to require a lot more than what we've shown for that last 60 minutes at Ibrox.
And I revisited his post-match interview following the Rangers game. That really cheered up my Sunday, I must say. I had to go and cry in a corner for a very dark corner. But he mentioned being too loyal. And that's something that he's mentioned before this season as well. He's been too loyal to certain individuals. That being said, he hasn't changed the personnel greatly over the course of the season. There's been the usual kind of two or three changes, and you know who's going to go out and you know who's going to come in. Do you foresee big changes heading into this very busy spell between now and the winter break?
I'm really not sure. I mean, I agree with what you were saying. He has sort of had similarly savage post-match conferences in previous games this season, but it tends to be, you know, you're right, it tends to be the same two or three people that drop out. You get the impression that there's some players on the team who he doesn't fully trust, it's fair to say. I think maybe Elliot Freer, Bigger Man, maybe fall into that bracket. It seems to be the same people that tend to be sacrificed when it comes to making changes to the team. You know, and conversely, there's three or four others that seem to have, you know, play week in, week out, despite maybe not, you know, or definitely not playing particularly great either. I'll be surprised to say, my heart says, as much as I would love him to change the side, I'd be surprised if he makes wholesale changes, if I'm totally honest. I think we might see two or three changes, but I would be surprised to see, you know, if some of the sort of people he's been loyal to said he would change it. But I would be quite surprised if wholesale changes.
Daniel, Aberdeen made a slow start to the season, and Derek McInnes' side were perhaps written off somewhat for that, but they seem to have been riding a bit of a crest of a wave heading into this game at Fir Park. Obviously, they had the massive victory over Rangers in the Hampden semi-final. They then went to Rugby Park, an incredibly difficult place to go, and got 3 points as well. They've beaten Accies comfortably. So they're in pretty good shape heading into this final. And he'll obviously want a big result to go into the final with.
Yeah, it must feel a bit ominous to you two right now.
Yeah, could you not hear that in Gordon's voice?
I know that feeling all too well of why do you bother? But I suppose, speak from a fan point of view, they will have fans sat right now thinking, we've won four in a row, we've got that great cup final, great result against Rangers. Oh, I've got a feeling we're going to lose against Motherwell. such is the logic of football fans. So that's something, isn't it? I've lived up here 15 years now, and Aberdeen have, by and large, been a bit of a perpetual disappointment to me, because I always feel they've got that potential to upset the apple cart and get right in there, especially when, you know, Rangers were out of the top division and everything. At the potential of the size of the city and the fantastic following they have, you know, they bring a real crowd down to Easter Road and things. And so every time when I think they're going to do something, I think it's going to be good for Scottish football in general. They generally mess it up, don't they? So perhaps they'll mess up against you. Perhaps they'll rest players as well, and you'll get the result that you deserve. I always remember as a kid, Borough losing away at Oldham Athletic 4-0. One of my mates' dads was a Lancastrian fella and an Oldham Athletic fan, and him, I was gutted, as you feel it so strongly when you're a kid, don't you? And he turned to me and said, sometimes they need a right spanking, lad. And so sometimes those, you know, you get those results and you get a hard-fought 0-0 where you feel a bit of pride back at them, or you even scrape a 1-0 off Curtis Main's arse. Who knows?
Well, that's what we need, but Gordon, we also need a performance, don't we? We're used to getting beat. I've said that so many times because all we've done is get beat, it feels like, this season. But the performances have been poor as well. And I can have a degree of sympathy if we play well and we lose, that happens. But I think with a home crowd that are getting gradually more and more negative, the players need to produce the goods on Saturday, get the spirits up, because we're going to get into incredibly difficult December, where we'll face, I think it's 7 or 8 games, 2 against Celtic. It's going to be a difficult time for Stephen Robinson, but a good performance could raise the confidence levels, could raise the spirits of the supporters, and that will be significant in a time where there will be pressure on the manager.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, up until the Rangers game, in fairness, as much as the results and performances haven't particularly great at all this season, we hadn't really taken a doing off anyone up until that game. And, you know, there was definitely a difference in that last 30, 40 minutes at Ibrox, in that quite simply some of the players absolutely chucked it. There's no two ways about it. So there have been probably quite a bit of finger pointing done publicly and I'd imagine privately as well, from the manager to a lot of the players. And you would expect, or at least hope, there's going to be some sort of reaction this Saturday. You know, it's getting to that stage in the season where Daniel mentioned winning 1-0 off a goal of Curtis Lane's arse. I would, you know, it's great would be to see a good performance on Saturday. I would just love to see us get a result first and foremost, because as you say, we've got a really tough running coming up. Just when we look like we're maybe to start hitting a wee run together with those wins against St Mirren and Dundee, we've, you know, took a step forward to go two back with, you know, getting an absolute doing at Ibrox. So it's really important that we start to pick up points, even against teams like Aberdeen, who, you know, traditionally are a big side and we maybe wouldn't be expected on paper to take anything from it. I think we need to start taking points from top six sides and, you know, we're pulling one or two results out of the bag, because if, you know, if we don't, we could be heading into the winter break and then into early next year fighting a relegation battle.
Prior to kick-off on Saturday, we're hosting our third annual Christmas Toy Drive. The Toy Drive supporting children across North Lanarkshire who perhaps are going into Christmas not expecting very much, and we just hope that with your support we can make Christmas that wee bit more special for families in and around the North Lanarkshire area that are struggling. The Toy Drive is arranged in association with the Motherwell Community Trust, as well as the North Lanarkshire Council Christmas Toy Appeal. We'll be outside the Davy Cooper stand from round about 1:30 on Saturday, right up until kick-off. We have put 2:55 as the time that the Toy Drive finishes. Basically, that is because last year we had so many people coming 5 minutes before kick-off. It was quite overwhelming for us, and we missed the first half of the Motherwell versus Celtic game. So as much as that's maybe against the spirit of the event, please, if you can, get along a wee bit earlier. There's specifications on our Twitter page. Any requests from those that can't make it, I'll happily meet up with you through the week and accept the toy donations, and we'll make sure that they get to where they need to be on Saturday afternoon. For me personally, this is one of the biggest things that the podcast have done over the years. We've been involved with various charity projects, of course, but this is a very rewarding one. And it's only done with the help of both the Motherwell support and the opposition support. In previous years, Kilmarnock supporters, Celtic supporters have really stepped up to the plate and shown that there's much more to football than the 90 minutes on the pitch. Hopefully, again, on Saturday, that can be the exact same. The Aberdeen fans can get behind it. I know the Motherwell fans will do the same. So I look forward to seeing you all on Saturday. As I say, we'll be outside the Davy Cooper stand from 1:30, and we hope to see you there. The podcast are also hosting the Q&A and football quiz on Wednesday evening at the Centenary Suite at Fir Park. Again, entry's free, although we will be hosting a short food drive where donations will be taken to Basics Food Bank. So a few big events for the podcast over the course of the week, and hopefully we'll see as many of you there as possible. Gordon, I would like to thank you for your time tonight. It's been entertaining and it's been very nice, hasn't it, to avoid talking about Motherwell for a full podcast?
It definitely has, yeah. It's been a nice change at times. Hopefully next time round. But no, it's been great. Thanks for having me.
Daniel, exact same sentiment to yourself. I've been really enjoying spending my train journeys and my early nights reading the book, and hopefully I'll actually get it finished tonight. And then after that, maybe a wee bit sly this, but we're going to put it up as a raffle prize as well for the Q&A and quiz night on Wednesday evening. So
I'll send you an extra one for that. Don't worry about that. I love to hear of football doing social good, which is exactly what you've just described. So no, I'll send you an extra copy for that. No problem. And thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Well, there you go. You won't be getting a second-hand one if you win the raffle. You will be getting a brand new one. And I might even request that Daniel signs it for as well. That would be great.
Certainly will.
As I say, though, Daniel, thank you very much. It's been very entertaining, and it's great to hear the opinions of an outsider, if you will, on all things Scottish football. It's greatly appreciated.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks very much. Cheers, Gordon, as well.
Cheers, man.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
never surprise me. Don't tell me you're afraid of the past. It's only the future that didn't last. You're kidding yourself.